G'day and welcome to the Farms Vice podcast with your host, Jack Creswell. Whether you farm it, service it, or just love it, this podcast is for you. We'll bring you the techniques and technologies you can implement into your day straight from the leaders and innovators themselves. Spread the Farms Vice so that we can reach more farmers right across Australia. Follow us on all of your socials at Farms Vice and let's get into this episode. Welcome back to the GPA and Farms Advice partnership, where we bring you the stories about what's really driving Australian grain growers across the country. Today on the show, we have GPA's Northern Region Director, Matthew Madden. Matthew is an experienced and passionate grain grower from east of Moree, New South Wales, some of the country's best soils, and I'll let him tell you that. He produces a variety of dryland crops, including wheat, barley, chickpeas, and sorghum. After graduating Orange Agriculture College back in the day, gaining an associate diploma in farm management, he has spent 37 working years managing and running his own farm business. So he has a lot to say in this episode, and I really got a lot out of his conversation and what sort of tips he has from that experience with his employees, but also with his advocacy in a numerous amount of roles across the years. So make sure you tune in for this episode. So Matthew, welcome to the Farms Advice podcast. Great to have you here today. And on behalf of GPA and myself, thanks for coming on. Pretty grateful to have people like yourself taking the time out of your day to come on and share some Farms Advice with us. Just before we get started and down to agribusiness, as I say, tell us a little bit about your background and where you've come from.
Yeah, so my background, look, I'm, what am I now, 60-odd years old now, and I've been a farmer actually all my life. I grew up around about 80 kilometres north of Moree, and my parents were both came from farming families, so I won't say it got into my blood, but it became a passion of mine very early. I've got three sisters and two brothers, so we had a fine old time growing up in the bush, as you'd say. And you know, we went off to the local bush school, went off to university, boarding school, and university. But I started doing a law degree, and I just realised very early that wasn't for me. Both my brothers were in law, my three sisters were at university, and I just realised that that was not going to be the life that I really wanted to lead. So I bailed out of university and went to Ag College at Orange Ag in the heyday back in the early 80s. And, decided that I wanted to be a farmer, and the best way to be, one of the best ways to be a farmer is go and learn or get if my parents were that interested in ag education and I want to be a farmer, I'll get myself a degree in farm management to come back, if I was able to come back to help run the farm with that degree. And that's what I did. So, that was back in 83 that I left Ag College, and I was end of 82, and I was married in 83. So I was married quite young, started our family very early, and really got stuck into the business, and have enjoyed it every moment of it. It's droughts, floods, good times, bad times, but it's what I signed up for. And I always tell people that I do what I do by choice. Yeah. So, I had to do something else, and I wanted to be a farmer, and no gripes or no complaints about how it turned out. So, 40 odd years later, I'm still farming. But and I was probably doing what most other farms were doing, just raising the family, trying to expand the business, which we did to some degree throughout those years, and to be a better farmer or more successful, however, what metric you want to use that as success. But, I was doing what I thought a reasonably good job through the droughts and floods and whatever else nature threw at us. But the question for you is how did I get involved in advocacy? It came about when I had a farm accident in 2009. I got my leg caught in an auger, and I would say nearly died, but pretty close anyway. I was airlifted to Sydney in intensive care. Didn't lose my leg, but all but. So And I didn't really work for 12 months and didn't really even work physically for another couple of years after that. Then I took a job in town at the agribusiness. So I got understanding of farming from a different farm business, agribusiness, from this different perspective. This company was exporting wheat to Asia, involved in wheat breeding. I had to actually classify, get a wheat classified, get a PBR on a wheat, just from a very small company and from a back only from farming. So that sort of really opened my eyes. I did it after 4 years. When my son had come home and he was young, then I sort of thought I'd run the course there, and we decided, then I came back onto the farm to help drive the business here. But during that time, that's when I got involved with New South Wales Farmers and joined the Grains Committee of New South Wales Farmers in 2016, and then I was chair in 2017, and then I progressed through there. And being chair really opened my eyes up to the extent of advocacy throughout Australia and what the representatives of the other state farming organisations and what people are actually doing for what my industry, our industry, but it was really my industry as well. So to meeting these people, the passion that they've got there, the experience, I thought it really started to rub off on me. I thought these guys have put so much work into this. I'd really like to be a part of this and see if I can add some value. And that's what drove me to put myself forward to be elected to different bodies. And that culminated in being elected a director of GPA at the last AGM. And a role that I'm, really do feel I really hope I can add some value, because representatives of our industry, well, we've got to try and drive the interests of our grain growers forward. The interests. Yep. Don't know who's, if we don't, nobody's going to look after us unless we put ourselves forward.
You put your own hand in there, and as well, but like you jumping on a board has probably helped out your own farming enterprise and going through those 40 years of peaks and troughs. From your farming, from your ag business management course at Orange Ag, you've seen and applied yourself, your experiences to the broader community of what, not just your region of where you grew up, where you are now in Moree, and applying that right across the board rather than just what you're doing. Like similar to what the podcast is achieving as well as what these boards are for the greater community, I think.
Oh, without a doubt. It really does highlight that farms across Australia, we farm in different areas, but we all face similar challenges. Yep. From Western Australia to New South Wales, even to Victoria. On a micro level, we've got our own different ways we do things, different methods, different farming systems. When we get to the macro levels, our challenges are the same. It's logistics, it's inputs, it's supply chains. Another, very important one for GPA is biosecurity. It's, somebody's got to get the grassroots input to ensure that those policies are in place to look after agriculture in Australia. And that's where I'm really find that, if we don't do it, no one else is going to do it for us. I'll strive to do, put the time and effort in, because remember, I'm a farmer, my business is a farm, my friends are farmers. So it's a win-win, hopefully a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, definitely. And you've got some skin in the game as well as a farmer. But as farmers mostly listening to this podcast, let's go into your operation and see what your season's looking up to. Have you started planning the crop already, getting it in?
No, we're middle of April now. Look, things look pretty, from a moisture perspective, we are chock-a-block.
Yep.
We haven't started planting yet. We're thinking of starting next week. We'd like to start around about Anzac Day, but there are a few people having a go at some early wheats in the district. Canola's not a big crop around in the north where I'm, northwest New South Wales, but there's certainly great interest in it this year. Some guys who put it in last year had an absolute cracker. Good prices, good yields, but everything, most things were good last year except for chickpeas. We farmed 4,000 acres just east of Moree, and it's a reasonably simple rotation: wheat, barley, chickpeas, and summer crops. We have sorghum and cotton, dryland cotton. We have grown it in the past. We've just opted for sorghum this year, and might rue that decision. Cotton, dryland cotton is the yields are terrific and the prices are unbelievable. However, it's we'll stick to our knitting, and we'll consider it in the future as well. It's just made a decision, and look, we had a great summer crop, but saw cotton would have been better. So we're probably going more wheat this year. We were, half our crop last year was chickpeas, half our winter crop area. So we put that all back into wheat, a little bit of barley, and a few more chickpeas. Unfortunately, chickpeas is about the only non-bright light in the ag horizon. It's the punishing tariffs in India at 80%, which didn't get changed with the free trade agreement, which has caused a bit of disappointment for chickpea growers, and in particular, and pulse growers in general. But the season's great. It's almost shaping up to be three in a row.
Yeah.
And I'd say unheard of, but been a long time coming. Inputs, we're all very mindful that our prices might have gone up. Our prices for our commodities might have gone up 50 to 100, and canola is 100 double, but wheat's kind of gone up 50%. But our inputs, in some case, your fertiliser, your urea trebled, starter fertilisers have doubled, and some of our herbicides certainly gone up Roundup and some of the others, but they will pencil out on using an Excel spreadsheet. They'll pencil out all right if the increase in prices, it'll just increase our risk. So once again, we'll be mindful that the prices are great, inputs have gone up, we've got moisture. Once again, we'll probably have to ensure that we give ourselves the best potential to get the big yields as we did last year, because that was a really surprising outcome. Not so much last year, the year before, coming out of the 2019 drought. Farmers had been pretty well stretched for 3 years during that drought, but still, a lot of people gave themselves the best chance when the season did break in 2020. And 2020 was a record wheat crop in New South Wales, 13.4 million tonnes. Nobody thought they could, and I think it's probably gone around it last year, but the numbers aren't in. But people spent the money, gave themselves the best potential, and Mother Nature did the rest. But I think that those lessons will be learned, and even for this year with high inputs, the prices are right, the moisture's there, you've just got to give yourself the best opportunity to reap those rewards.
Yeah, of course.
And that's how they may be.
I think farmers are putting every square inch of crop in that they possibly can for 2022. But like an interesting thing I saw on Twitter earlier today was, how far out should you be purchasing to limit your risk of inputs? Like how far out do you do for your own farm? Because this farmer was like 12 to 18 months out. Is that doable across the board? That seems a fair way out.
Fertilizers, urea is a tricky one. I know people were trying to buy fertilizer last year. When I was going $950 to $1,000,
yep.
The issue then was you had to take delivery. So you couldn't actually price it unless you took delivery. Now, unfortunately, I don't have mechanisms to sort of forward a price unless you actually just walk in and buy it.
Yep.
That happened in the early days. It wasn't price protection. That was physically, people wanted to have it in their shed in case of supply chain issues, which we did see people say, well, we just can't get the stuff in from China. We just can't get those products we need in a timely fashion, parts, machinery, fuel. So people were stocking up. And that narrative's probably changed a little bit now with, nobody wants to buy urea at $1,900, but but we should have bought it at 1,100 or 1,200 if we had somewhere to put it. But and so those people knew the price was going up, but then the Ukrainian crop situation, well, it's pushed wheat, but the gas prices and pushed urea. So that was probably something that may not have been able to be foreseen with any great certainty. Really the price mechanisms for buying, they are available, but really you just have to walk in some cases, walking in the checkbook and buy it.
Yep.
Some maybe, and now it's at 12, no, I'll say use Roundup as an example. Most people use Roundup. I think it was $9.60, but it's been up to 12, but it was 5. So where's a good price point to suggest I should be getting a lot of stock in on hand, a bit like the fuel. So, but if people want to have it, and I think there's a, not so much for taxation reasons, but just physically having that inputs on hand when they need them.
I think if you've got the facilities, it's a good idea, but whether or not it fits your own circumstances as a grain farmer is another story as well.
I certainly agree. It's you might get it right, but you might get it wrong. I mean, we didn't forward buy, but I know we were advised to buy Roundup last year, $67. We bought a little bit to take advantage of that, because at least there was a price signal coming that it's going up.
Yep.
But the urea price was more difficult, and that's been used up. And, I mean, we purchased a weeder, so we're actually using a little bit less chemical. We're using less volume of chemical by nearly 80%.
Yep.
So some of those pricing, we've been shielded to some degree.
Yeah.
The quantum of chemical we're using, but it's still, we're down now to back to blanket spraying, so pre winter crop planting. So it's certainly very mindful of making sure that every litre you buy is doing the right job.
Yeah, absolutely. But the reward on the other end with the higher prices for commodities at the moment is really good. But what I want to talk about with you is like three things that you see as the larger issues within your advocacy roles with Grain Producers Australia, and like what are farmers feeling at the moment when you speak to the board?
The supply chain issues. Now,
yep.
GPA really for the review into the grain industry, because nothing's really been, hasn't since deregulation, 2008, there really hasn't been a really good look under the bonnet of how it is working. How is the free market working for the industry and also for growers in particular? Because we're getting a lot of noise and a lot of questioning about why the futures prices for grain somewhat a lot higher than what we're seeing our cash price in Australia. Now, some of those questions are easy to answer, some of them aren't. So we would actually look like the ACCC to come in and have a really good look, get under the bonnet, and with their powers, they can actually compel people to answer their questions. So if there's nothing, if there's nothing to hide, there's nothing to worry about. But it will answer those questions on both sides. And is there something that government can play a part in to understand some of the constraints of the supply chain issues to make it more competitive? And competitive, I mean, also known as driving the price down of cost, which will increase our returns. If we can get it to market a lot quicker or cheaper, that's an immediate return to the farmer at their farm gate. And that's the important thing. Absolutely. We just need to understand, if we need to go to government with a policy saying, if you spend X, that $2 billion that appears to be not getting into growers' pockets, we might be able to put that money back into Australian pockets, because we can't get the grain out of Australia fast enough in the first 6 months of the marketing year, or it's taking too long. We are not unable to take advantage of high prices overseas because we've got supply chain constraints.
Yep.
I mean, you just can't book a train or a boat or even almost a truck to get it to get to port at the moment until about August, September, which is good problems to have. But if we had better supply chain, we might be able to move a little bit more quickly to take advantage of that. And that's a really big push at the moment from GPA and to get a really good understanding back to our grower members. Biosecurity.
That's a big one. Let's just quickly hear from the CEO of GPA Australia and then we'll get back into the episode.
I'm Colin Battles. I'm the Chief Executive of Grain Producers Australia, and we're pleased to be working and partnering with Jack Creswell and the Farms Advice podcast. Grain Producers Australia represents Australian grain farmers, and we work to deliver a more profitable and sustainable industry and getting the message out about what we actually do for growers through the Farms Advice podcast, we think is a great way. Probably mostly because Jack himself is also a farmer and he's speaking to other farmers with what he's doing with Farms Advice podcast. We think it's a great initiative. So whether you're sitting back in your header or if you're driving in the car from one town to another and you're listening to the Farms Advice podcast and you like the work that GPA does, then feel free to get in and support us and support Jack, and together we can help make our industry stronger and more profitable and sustainable.
Now, let's get back into it.
Biosecurity, it's not a matter of just banging on. It's just a matter of making people really understand. I mean, there was a Capra beetle incursion into New South Wales. I mean, a lot of people know the Capra, grain growers, well, they don't even know or understand what Capra beetle is. And it's a very minute little bug that could cause $17 billion of damage to the Australian grains industry over 15 years. Then you would take notice.
Pretty terrifying.
It would just shut us out of the export markets overnight. And it wasn't just luck that this Capra beetle was detected, and it was some of the things that framework had been put into place to make sure it didn't spread.
Yep.
And that's where the result was important. That was detected, fortunately, found very quick, came in on containers in fridges, into good guys in, I think, yeah, fridges or stoves in white goods. Not even in agricultural products or produce. And that's why, you know, we've been calling for a container levy just to, you know, $5-$10 a container to make sure there's enough resources at the border to make sure not just everything, because it could destroy Australian agriculture pretty quickly. I mean, that's just the grain. We've got foot and mouth. We've got a Japanese encephalitis, fall armyworm. There's a range of biosecurity issues that need the resourcing to ensure that they don't spread if they get here. Best we don't keep them out, but if they do get in here, we need the resources to contain them. We need trade. It's a trade and market access issue. If we've got it, nobody else will be constrained where we can sell our product.
Yeah, definitely. I think speaking with Barry Large on the previous episode about how wide it can spread, the impact of what the Capra beetle was, it came in on fridges going to the good guys or something like that, just like how much accountability right across the industry people need, and maybe that $10 per container can make that viable option to continue searching through these containers to make sure we get on top of everything. But for these biosecurity risks, what are farmers able to do on the ground to ensure that they're not under threat by these?
Be very, very vigilant about what comes on your farm. I mean, they're the overseas pests, but we've got domestic problems as well. So anything that strange weeds, it just, and their advisors and agros, anything that looks odd, it really should be investigated, because it's not just might not be you that has the problem, because if you let it go undetected and pretend that, yeah, if I don't see it, it'll go away. Suddenly, not just your farm, your district farm, Australian industry. So vigilance is the key. I mean, mice are, they're a biosecurity threat as well. I mean, that's one underlying domestic issue that, you know, if you don't look after your mice, your neighbour's going to have them, or your neighbour, you're going to have them. So it's really a combined effort and a collaborative effort to ensure that the biosecurity is not just confined to you or state borders. It's a really important that everybody plays their part. And don't be frightened of, if you've got something, don't be frightened to report it. It might be very scary, but it'd be better that it's done now than have it spread and shut down whole industries. So I'm pretty passionate about that. Just, you know, be a biosecurity warrior and do your bit to ensure that you protect yourself and your industry.
Yeah, I think you need to knock it on the head pretty quick, just to get your property, make sure, ensure everything and reduce the risk as a farmer. And then the impact of what you said, was it $17 billion the Capra beetle could take away from ag?
Australian grains. No, that's just the Australian grains industry.
Yeah.
We lost export markets. As one of the grain industry leaders said to me, he said it's potentially the biggest risk he's faced in 17 years in his grain leadership, to give some perspective of the importance of it. So it's really highlighted to me the importance of biosecurity. And it's interesting that COVID is a biosecurity risk. So it shouldn't be hard to explain to the general public about biosecurity. You think of the disruptions that COVID have caused you, your family, the world. It's a biosecurity issue. It's the same as what can happen on farms. Now that traveling's back on, so we've got to be a heightened alert again about biosecurity. I mean, we've certainly got agricultural trade hasn't really stopped, but now we've got people trade, people movements sort of ramping up again. So we don't want the resources we had on at the borders, it needs to be probably trebled now, because still look after the produce side, whether it be ag or implements or whatever, trade goods, but people goods as well. They're one of the a lot of things that come in through passenger arrivals. So we've got to be absolutely vigilant and keep hammering the government for those resources to ensure that, unfortunately, money talks, and money and resources and people on the ground, and just to ensure that we just do whatever we can to keep them out.
Absolutely. If you throw that figure around of $17 billion, I think it might get a few people moving around a bit quicker.
But even foot and mouth disease, we got it in here. Imagine what it'll do to the animal industry. And FMD would actually curtail grain exports. So it's all intertwined and interconnected. So Australia's got a clean and green image, and we want to keep it that way. But it's going to take us banging on about it, and we'll continue to bang on about it, because that's the importance of it.
That's it. And as farmers, I think we need to bang on about what issues we're coming up with and the support that we need from government bodies to enhance and improve our outlook. But for the three issues, you've rattled off supply chains, biosecurity as one of the biggest ones. What's the third one on the top of your mind?
We've got probably the grains, but we've got the labour issue. Now, COVID's really exposed the vulnerabilities of our labour supply chain as well. I mean, the backpackers aren't here. We didn't grind to a halt, but it put a lot of pressure on a lot of people to get friends, family, 75-year-olds, to fill those gaps. Now, what we need to know is, A, why can't we get, is there enough people within Australia to do those jobs? Or why are we not attracting people to agriculture? there's a couple of programs coming in place. It's Ag Start, Ag Assist, NFF, getting school leavers in. They're short numbers, but the Ag Visa from overseas, but they appear to be small numbers. Yep. I mean, there are 145 backpackers in Australia. I mean, and a lot of those were, they're in regional areas. They may not have all been driving tractors or fruit picking, but a lot of them were, because they're not here anymore. We've got some, we've been involved in the Australian Defence Force, getting some of those semi-retired guys who have transferable skills. Now, they're not a long-term solution, but they are a solution for the harvest period and those surge periods that we have, that are akin to not just agriculture, but planting, harvesting. They're the two big areas, and fruit picking times. They're time critical times that you need a lot of people and you don't need a lot of people. So a lot of work's been trying to get in there to understand if we need a lot of people for a short time, who are those people? And there's the green nomads, there's students, there's retired defence force, and there's backpackers. That's what we've used them to fill the gap until they weren't here. So back, or do we need to train another cohort to fill those gaps? Or are we going to, a lot of farms, are we going to have to go to somewhere where there's permanent labour? So people are going to rearrange how they do things on their farm. They just employ more permanent labour and ensure that they've got something for them to do when they're not so busy. And, not just something to do, that's wrong, but gainfully employed, be a productive part of the business. So they're the challenges, because we've built up a system using temp labour. I don't maybe you have to change the word casual labour, temp labour to fill those gaps, because that's what worked. Is it going to continue to work? Well, maybe if the backpackers come.
I think that seasonal labour. That seasonal labour is never really going to change of how much we need it within harvest periods and even planting time. In the grains industry and the wide industry as well, horticulture is a big one, tackling the issue front on, as well as grains, but getting the crop in is just as important, and seeing those roles. I think there is a lot of long-term roles out there, permanent roles that carry on if you've got the will to go harvesting and even to continue right way through with that farmer, contractor, what it may be. There's possibly going to be a role there for you, but sounds to me like the Orange Ag College needs to come back.
It's I was talking about this to somebody else the other day, and there's only one college almost in Australia that's doing farm management, and that's down at Marcus Oldham.
Yeah.
And I thought, in the 80s when I went through, Marcus was there, Orange Ag, there was Gap doing a little bit of it, Tokau, a couple in Victoria. There were a range. Now there's one. And there are degrees, and I'm not discounting the UNE Rural Science and Ag Economics degrees at Sydney. They're very, very important, but not for the farm management side of things. So, if we're going to encourage people to have those skills, we need the basis of the education to start with. So here's a pathway.
Yeah.
You can go up there with a farm management degree, you will be able to, there's plenty of jobs out there to actually get with that degree. And so people are using other pathways to get to that managerial positions. So, and that's part of that training.
I think so. But if you run through these issues that you've brought up, supply chains, biosecurity and labour, the pandemic's sort of super sped those up and probably prepped us for what's coming next to try reinforce and put some processes in place for what this is. Have you seen, as an advocate, but also working with GPA, have you seen what processes starting to be put in place with policies to actually solve these issues?
Certainly, I'll go back to the labour ones. I just remember the point I was going to be bringing in autonomous tractors and autonomous gear is just coming at us a lot faster than I actually thought it would. And it's being exacerbated by the labour issues. I mean, GPO, we've got our autonomous code of conduct to have that policy in place for when we thought they'd start bringing in the autonomous track, the old robotic tractors. Well, they're here now. John Deere have released their latest one, which is basically a driverless tractor, which you can control from the side of the field. And unfortunately, people will, I think, this is only an opinion now, that people will go there pretty quickly because they can't get the people, can't get the staff when they need it. And I thought it'd be bigger operations or bigger contracts that would be the first to do it. And now I'm thinking, actually, it might even be medium-sized farms that do it. You know, guys like on our farm, it'll be, if we just had an autonomous tractor going round and round on its own, well, that would free up some of the load it up to spray in front of it. And when it wasn't working, the tractor goes in the shed.
Yeah.
So I think that's coming at us very quickly. And look, that could be, that's, I like progress, but it's almost a detriment to regional populations. You know, we want to give people jobs. They don't want to work till we're getting autonomous track autonomy. Then there's no jobs. Yep. So it's a vicious circle. But the job's got to get done.
Yeah,
people will go, producers or business owners will say, we need to get the crop planted on time and efficiently as possible. So I think there'll be a balance there. So, and it's not going to overcome the labour issues, but you're still going to need people who understand how to use to operate it, which are more, it's more of a skilled operation, but you're still going to have the people who are going to have to change the discs and make sure the seed goes in the ground and the real, the hands-on farming tech knowledge and know-how is still going to be desperately needed. It's AI is coming and remote sensing will help, but there's still going to be that need for people, for farmers, whether they be owner-operators or managers or agros. We're going to still need people to ensure that we get the productivity continues.
Yeah, definitely. And someone like off the back of it, someone's got to be there to read that data to improve that machinery or improve the way you work your own farm. So a lot of change is coming and it's coming a lot quicker than anyone sort of anticipated, especially as a farmer that's just used to the one-way plow and old traditional and coming up with the new fronts of autonomous workings, new implements to go along with them as well. But very exciting on the back of it.
It's definitely coming. So much. I mean, I didn't think I was that old. And I said, someone said to me, "What's the biggest innovation you've seen in your farming life?" I said, "Oh, an air-conditioned tractor." Like a bit older than me, he said, "Oh, I like rubber tires." But exponential growth now. You know, GPS. When this first came out, I thought, it's expensive, and do we really need it? Once we got it, you just never go back. Just for the ease of operation, the efficiency, just the time saving, the resource saving, and that was the first. Well, that wasn't even data; it was just driving straight. But now we've got the precision ag. Some really exciting innovations coming there, and it's just it's just going to be. I said it's still shake my head sometimes. How can it be exponentially gets better? Better all the time, but it just does. That's what we thought would be 5 years away is suddenly next year. It's that's back to my point about the autonomous tractors. I mean, John Deere might be the first, but everybody will be right behind them. And it might, I don't even know what the price is, but someone will say that's cheap and I'll have it. And then in a couple of years, those days of 12-hour shifts on the tractor might be just a memory. So sometimes not a fond memory, but they'll somebody will be doing it for us. Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Farmers, won't it? And we may be just plugging our tractors in, no cab to clean out, running the mud through the cab no more.
We don't even know what they'll be running them on. Pretty exciting whether it's going to be hydrogen, electric. Pretty sure it'll be diesel for a while, but that's not the important what it runs on. It's just how it runs, how efficiently it runs.
Yeah.
And there'd be some more opportunities there. But as long as the power source is cheap, effective, and reliable, we'll ensure we get the crops in.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's always those early adopters for the new equipment coming in just to sort of trial it for the industry. And then you'll see a much roller. If your neighbour has autonomous tractors, you're probably more likely to get them as well.
And the reasonings, they're sound reasonings for having them. It's not just keeping up with the Joneses anymore. It's a business decision that will work. And I'm looking forward, because I didn't think I'd see autonomous tractors, probably in my, or robotic tractors in my, for another 10 years, they're here now. So it's that rate of change is what's very exciting. And probably one of the most exciting things about agriculture at the moment, which from a food producer, is it's almost provenance and traceability. I know, the high-end food producer are talking about it all the time, but when they're talking about it, it feeds through provenance, traceability, and that's going to feed through to people's understanding of where their food comes from, how it's produced, because they're starting to get really interested now. Not just the niche number of people who are interested, but the broader general public are really starting to get interested. And then, to me, that will filter down to, then they'll get an understanding of what it takes to grow that. Then they'll understand what it costs to grow that, and what the cost is for them to have relatively cheap food. And they might understand that they've got to pay to ensure they've got safe food available to them and they protect the environment. I mean, we can't keep, if they don't like industrial agriculture, then what they deem industrial agriculture, synthetic fertilizer, chemical, but that's giving them relatively cheap food. But if they want something else, that they will probably understand that they might have to pay a bit more for it. And that probably be a good thing for farmers, that they will finally, they'll do the right thing when they're fairly rewarded. So I reckon that, to me, that's one of the most exciting things besides the actual autonomous tractors, which is pretty cool. But traceability and provenance to make people understand what it takes to actually put the food on their table, safe and what we'll consider really affordable now.
I think that's
my number.
Very cool from both ends, as a consumer and also as a farmer, having your product and knowing that the consumers are learning the story of how it was made and how that grain made the bread or the beer that you're drinking at the pub as well. So it's an exciting future for all these things coming up, but also as the industry to improve and all of us start to utilise these new technologies and ways of working.
That's exciting. I've loved agriculture for 40 years, but it just gets... It still excites me when I get up in the morning. Just see the rapid rate of change. So you get to see it pretty quickly.
So for yourself, Matt, what makes you so passionate 40 years down the track from finishing off ag college in 83 to continue, like for the younger blokes listening, the grain farming, they're looking to buy a farm. What made you so passionate about improving your own farm, but also others out there as well through your advocacy with GPA and others?
I suppose it was always a fairly simple one for me because I just wanted to be a farmer. But nothing's the same. Even even, you know, for 40 years ago, we were always trying something new. Probably, but things didn't, it wasn't a rapid rate of change like it is today. But, you know, I was there when Roundup or glyphosate first came to Australia. And then see the adoption of zero till. I mean, that took a little while. And it changes a little bit more slowly now. It's changed slowly, but it still changed. And nothing was the same. So every season, you look at your rainfall charts, it looked the same, but it wasn't. So every decision you make affects what you do 6 months' time. So it really keeps you on your toes. And just the challenge of not beating Mother Nature, working with Mother Nature. And because sometimes you get it, when you get it right, it's no greater joy. When you get it wrong, well, you know, you've just got to shoulder it and understand that it might have been my fault, but how can I get better? Or I did everything right, but I'm just going to have to work. Mother Nature got me in the end. But I'm not beaten. I'm going to do it again next year. I'm going to do it the year after, and I'm going to get it right. I'm going to get better at it. And that's what's really driven me for the last 40 years. Just knowing that whatever you did, you could probably do it. You could probably tweak something to make it a bit better next year. So it just gets, that's what gets me out of bed in the morning, knowing that whatever I do, I can probably, on my own farm or on our own farms, we can improve it. We're not at perfection yet. So, and whatever decision we make will affect what happens to us. So, you know, make sure that we keep working hard out. And on the advocacy side, like I said, the people I've met and, you know, just to talk that have shown their passion for it, it really did rub off on me that these guys were out there to make a difference, and they really put their heart and soul into it. And it's not just for them, it's for everybody.
Yep.
And that's when I'd say to my friends, mate, I'm not just doing this for me, it's, you know, you're going to benefit as well. And yeah, I just like working with the passionate, engaged people. Really, I really enjoy it. And hopefully I can add value. That's the other thing.
Well, mate, just going by this episode, I think you've added a lot of value that people can take away and go and think about, use it as motivation or even just implement it into their own farm. So really appreciate you coming on today. Before you go, though, what's your one piece of farm's advice for a younger farmer looking to get ahead in the grains industry?
Don't be disheartened. It's there are always opportunities. I remember talking to a Zimbabwean 25 years ago when land values were $300, which was, you know, double the value of what he thought it was.
Yep.
I'll never be able to do that. Always an opportunity, even today. And look, just don't have to think outside the square, but you've got to be passionate about what you do and look for opportunities, whether it's, you know, engaging, you know, with people who do have the resources that want to get into farming. You might have the know-how, but somebody else might have the resources. So don't be disheartened. There's always an opportunity if you're prepared to put yourself in the path of good luck, but it's through good work, hard work, that you may get to realise your dream.
Yeah, 100%. That's a great one for the younger farmers out there, and I might even take a little bit away of that for myself and our family farm. But for the podcast, who else would you like to hear on here and why?
Certainly, I know it's farming from the industry side. We could find some light. I don't know. Has Andrew Whitelaw been on here?
No, I actually contacted him the other day, so I'll have to up him and get him on here.
Yeah, I mean, we just get a different perspective. I mean, we always like, you know, at least perspectives and, sorry, I probably wasn't over that question. But,
I know.
To ensure that, you know, we get a balanced view.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's very important as well as a podcast, but also as the farmer on the other end. And Matt, before you go, where can we contact you? Do you have a Twitter handle? I didn't do my research before, but I'll put your GPA profile in.
I do. Matthew Madden. I can't remember what it is now. But I do have one. I'll find it and send it to you.
Yeah, too easy. I'll be able to find it and I'll put it down in the show notes so everyone can have a look at what's going on in his role at GPA, but also as a farmer doing it, running his own operation up in Moree as well. Beautiful part of the world.
Thank you for tuning in to the Farms Advice podcast. It is produced by Adverturize Digital, the agribusiness marketing specialist. Go to farmsadvice.com.au for more information on this episode and the others before, and spread the Farms Advice. If you love this episode, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts and subscribe, as it helps other farmers find us too. But until then, next Tuesday, keep on farming. In the spirit of reconciliation, the Farms Advice podcast acknowledges the traditional custodians of country for Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respect to their elders past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.